madness. This year, yet another revival of interest in one of the best British groups of the late 70s and early 80s. This weekend in Finsbury Park, to the north of London, Madness will reform for two shows only, playing in front of 30,000 people on each day. These shows are the climax in the current resurgence in the band's popularity, thanks to the release of the Divine Madness compilation. Tonight on Triple J, seeing as few of you will be able to share in the celebrations in London this weekend, we're going to give you the next best thing, an insider's view of why the band were and still are so huge. Woody Woodgate was the drummer with Madness. He joined them when he was 17 and stayed with the group until their split in 1986. Now he drums with Voice of the Beehive, hence his visit to Australia. So it's a good opportunity to reflect with him on the career of his former band.
Yes and no. No, not really. When we released Divine Madness and got the album together, we thought it would do quite well, but we didn't realise it would do as well as it did. I mean, it went straight into number one in England and stayed there for 4 weeks and then refused to go out of the top five for another 4 weeks after that, and still in the top 20, I think.
So, okay, the compilation comes out, it sells really well, now why get back together and do some shows? Was it your own feelings to want to get back on stage?
Well, it was a mixture of everything. I mean, the thing is that when rumours were going around that we were getting together in meetings and, you know, we were meeting all the time, you know, the phone started ringing saying, you know, are you getting back together again? No. Would you like to? Well, make us an offer. And, you know, the offers started coming in, and then, you know, some ridiculous figures started being bandied around, and we kind of went, well, why not? You know, if people are offering us this kind of silly money, you know, we could have a laugh as well.
It wasn't just because of the money, though, that you wanted
to get back. Oh, no, no, no. I mean, no, of course, yes, of course it was. No, it wasn't. Of course it wasn't. No, the whole fact that it helps promote the album, and we also did a one-off little thing for a television. It was a pilot, a television pilot program for Channel 4 and GoDisc, who Carl works for. He's an A&R man at GoDisc Records. And he owed them a few favours because of the time he'd spent working on the side with Madness. And they said, all right, well, get Madness on the programme. And he went, okay, all right, I'll give it a try. So we all got together and we did two numbers. We did House of Fun and It Must Be Love, just for the programme. And we just happened to do it in front of a live audience.
And how did it feel?
It was brilliant. I mean, we did 2 days rehearsals just to make sure that, you know, we could still play. And
it came back all to you very quickly?
Well, it felt very funny. In rehearsals, it felt very strange. It felt, you know, it didn't have the magic. But as soon as we stepped out on stage in front of an audience, it was like we'd never been away.
Was that always the way it was for Madness?
We were always better live, yeah. It's just one of those things. I mean, it was just brilliant. The magic came back. And that was when we said, you know, we only did two numbers. In fact, we threw in Madness, the track Madness, because it was the one that we all thought we could remember. And it just came back like, you know, we'd been playing it all the time. It was amazing. It was really wonderful. I mean, we got such a high from it. We, you know, it was like, almost like, come on, let's go back on stage and do even more. Mm. And even more. And it was a real buzz. I mean, it's just so fantastic.
Today I'm speaking with Woody Woodgate from Voice of the Beehive and also the drummer from Madness. Now, let's talk a little bit about the split. It happened in 1986 for Madness, yeah. And it was an amicable split, but what do you think, was it just like time had been spent, you'd done it, there was nothing else you could really do, and it was just time to end it? Was that the reason?
This could be a terrible interview if I just said yes, but yes. I will elaborate a little more. Yes, I mean, it really was. We'd done it, we'd been there, we'd seen it all, we'd, you know, made the film, printed the T-shirts, you know, written the book. It's everything that a band could do, we'd done. And musically, it was getting very difficult to be fresh and new. And we always said, the day that we stopped enjoying it, we would stop. And thank goodness we had the bottle to do so.
So it was felt.
Well, some of us did.
So it was.
Sorry.
Well, there was the madness,
well,
of course,
yes,
which came afterwards.
That is a bit of a sore in my side. I mean, that to me was a bit sad, really. I look back at it now, I can be objective, I can look back and I can say, well, they needed to do it, the four members that stayed on and continued and called themselves The Madness, only because they couldn't think of a better name. I thought it was a bit sad. They had to do it, really, just to get it off their chest. They had ideas that they could come up with something fresh and new without the distinctive bass and drum sound that Mark and I gave the band. And it just didn't work. It just didn't have the magic.
Hmm.
It was a bit sad, but I suppose they needed to go through it. I don't think they initially intended to do that, but I think when the band split up, everyone looked around and kind of thought, well, where to now? And I think the four of them really genuinely didn't know what they were going to do. And out of just security, I think, stuck together.
Yeah. What about you? What was your state of mind like?
Well, my state of mind was, it was a relief that it was all over, because it was getting quite painfully, you know, stale, and it was almost, you, I don't know.
Was that tearing inside
you? It was tearing inside. It just wasn't the same. It wasn't the same freshness. It wasn't any fun anymore. And you knew in your heart of hearts that really you shouldn't be doing it anymore, because it wasn't genuine. It was like hard work. It wasn't any fun. And it was almost like a pretense at the end. And we were going against all the things that we'd said we wouldn't be, you know, a staid old boring rock band. I mean, it was getting like a rock band. It wasn't like a fun pop band anymore.
Mm.
It was very, very hard. I mean, each album took longer and longer to do.
Okay, well, let's go back to the very much to the early days of
the happy days,
the formation of the band Madness. Yeah. Did it all come together very quickly then?
Did it come naturally at the beginning?
Yeah.
It was totally natural. I mean, when I listen back to the first album, it's just so naive. Musically, it's just so naive, but it's wonderful. It's seven very young individuals. I was the last person to join in 1978, September. So, and they'd been around a good year and a half or so before that.
Playing as the North London...
Well, the Invaders, initially, before they discovered that there was an Invaders, so they called themselves the North London Invaders.
And you were, what, 17 at the time?
I was, I think I was, yes. They thought I was a right geek, you know, but I was, really. Long hair and kickers and dungarees and, you know, it was like, you know, get your hair cut and buy yourself a suit, mate, you know.
And so did it work? Did you get a haircut?
I got myself a haircut and bought myself a suit, yeah. I was still the same person.
And you got the two-tone shoes?
No, not two-tone shoes, a three-tone suit. How about that?
Well, that's a pretty big step.
Well, that was a... Yeah, I got it in Oxfam for £2. It was, yeah, it just about fitted me, yeah. But, no, it was all a great change. I mean, the first thing was their desire to stop me playing technically, you know, flash. I mean, I was doing little flash rolls and little triplets on the bass drum, and it was all like, don't do that. Just go boof, baff, boof, baff, boof, baff. I'm going like all the way through, and they're going, yeah.
No. Was there a musical leader?
Yeah, Mike. Mike Barson. Yeah. He really did. Yes, he did. He led people by the nose. I mean, he really did. He, you know, if he didn't fall into line, Mike would be the man who got really pissed off. We were a bit flaky, really. I mean, you know, sometimes we wouldn't turn up to rehearsals, and it was... I mean, Mike was a man that pulled us all together. You know, he was the man that led us. He had the dream, and it was like, it will be fulfilled.
Buster, he sold the heat.
From Voice of the Beehive and Madness. Well, tell me, the image of Madness, were you totally happy with it the whole way through?
It wasn't me. I can't dance to save my life. So
they try to force you?
They gave me encouragement. Lee was very good in the fact that he's the nuttiest bloke in the world, and he'd make apparent... You'd never feel as though he'd been making a fool of himself, because he was just so amusing, so wacky. And the thing that he said was, if you believe in it and you're not scared, you can do anything you want. If you believe in it strongly enough and don't care what people think, you'll look natural because it will come naturally to you. There were times where you'd have someone from doing a photo session or a television crew saying, okay, one by one, all come out and do a dance, do a nutty dance. And it would come to my turn. It would be like, oh, my God, what do I do? I just kind of stood there and froze, and that was awful. That was in the early days. And the band soon realised that it just wasn't me. So it was quite good they all rallied behind me, you know. Don't ask Woody to dance, you know. But the other thing was we were surrounded by crew. I mean, our crew, Totes and Chalky, they're the two roadies for the band. And they were excellent dancers, two skinheads that had this unique style of dancing. They had it, Carl had it, Suggs had it. Lee was just a brilliant dancer. And it was all like, you know, get your arms right up to your chest, stick your bum out and wiggle away, you know. It was all, I don't know where it stemmed from.
The one thing that can happen with a band and an image that is a very strong part of the band's makeup is that the image can override the music and people can only concentrate then on the image and forget about the music. Did you ever feel with Madness that was getting a problem?
Yes, it was, definitely. We in fact, I think that's where it backfired on us later on in our career. It was that constant backlash against being wacky, nutty, zany chaps all the time. We were trying to prove that our music was worthy, and we had a lot more to say than just be, you know, this image of nuttiness. It was. I mean, in Europe, it was terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Why in Europe especially?
Well, I have no idea. They just saw us as being almost a circus act. It was really like, you put on your nutty suits now, yeah? And it was really like, what the hell are you going on about? You know, we're a band, we're over here to promote our record, we're doing a gig. Why do you want us to act like a bunch of idiots? I mean, Carl and Suggs, at one point, we called them the Coco Twins, because it's like Coco the Clown, you know? And they deliberately played up to it and put on circus noses, you know, clowns' noses, just to really, it's like a backlash against it all, because that's how the public were seeing the band at times, as like a novelty act.
It really was
terrible.
Yeah, but you did kind of set yourself up for that, though, didn't you? In hindsight, I mean, at the time, it's hard to know this.
Yeah, but you can see back now. Yes. All right, I'll be mad. All right.
It was all very logical, really. I mean, that the media approached the band in a fairly sort of two-dimensional way after a period of time, given the videos, given the whole image.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. Yes, I guess. What can I say? Yes. But I wasn't like that. I was the quiet, shy one.
But the music really did stand on its own merits. I mean, Madness produced some incredibly infectious pop songs that also had a depth to them as well.
Good, aren't they? I agree with you, yeah. I'm the drummer, so I can say that. It's all right, yeah.
And given, say, 10 years now between making a lot of those songs,
I mean, I must admit, when I heard It Must Be Love, when that was released again, and listening to the production on that is excellent, I just thought, wow, did we really sound that good? Stunning stuff for its time.
I never thought I'd miss you half as much as I do.
At the, I guess, the early shows of Madness, you attracted a fair contingent of skins, didn't you?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Did it get rough?
It got very rough. I mean, you know, the worst thing in the world is talking to European journalists who said, yes, I was at your gig and I was beaten up. And it's kind of like, oh, my God. It's like, you know, really, we're terribly sorry, but it's got absolutely nothing to do with us.
And was this just in the early days of the skins?
This was just in the early days, yeah. But it got to a point where journalists were beginning to they were convinced that we affiliated ourselves with right-wing fascist movements that our audience happened to be, you know, associated with. I mean, there was all kinds of, you know, rubbish written about the fact that we condoned British Movement and National Front, you know, skinheads, which is absolute rubbish.
So how did you get away from that? How did you stop the skins from turning up at madness shows?
Well, that was our whole point. We didn't want to stop anyone coming. Because you can't say that you're into, you know, freedom for everyone and equal rights for everyone, and then turn round and say skinheads can't go to our gigs. It's exactly the same. It's a prejudice. It's a form of prejudice. You can't tell by appearance, and we found that really distressing, that people were being discriminated against because of their fashion. Mm. There's so many skinheads that were complete wimps, you know. They might have had all the clothes and the fashion, but really they were just fashion victims. And we knew that, and the hardcore element of National Front and British Movement people were only a fraction. I mean, they were such a like a handful, you know. They used to start fights and be, it's like football matches, you know, you'll get a handful of real idiots that will start a fight.
Yeah. As madness progressed a little bit away from the straight ska sound of your early records and became more of a pop band.
Well, that's where we lost that element of supporters. We appealed to a much wider audience, and the skinhead element died out. I mean, I did have one skinhead at an open-air gig once who called to me through some railings and said, come here, Woody, come here. And I went over to him and he went, you sold out, you've completely sold out. You've left us all behind, you know. You know, you're not worthy of anything, you've completely sold out. And I thought, what is the matter with this bloke? All we've ever done is play the music that we want to play, and we've hoped that people enjoy it. And just because, you know, we don't associate ourselves with any groups whatsoever. I mean, he got really upset because he thought that we were like their, you know, crowning glorious leaders or something, you know, and it was really upsetting.
Tonight I'm chatting with Woody Woodgate from Voice of the Beehive and Madness. Okay, well, if I can just ask you about a few more of the Madness songs and maybe what comes to mind when you hear them now.
Yeah, sure.
Let's go for House of Fun, which was, out of all your hits, the only one that went to number one in the UK. What do you think of when you hear that, House of Fun?
Well, I think of a video more than anything. And I think of the fun that we had at a seaside resort and a fun fair. I can't remember which one it is. It's terrible. I have people who tell me which one it is because they know the rides. But that was just such good fun making that video. And I think of the controversy then of the song being about condoms, buying, you know, going into a chemist shop, not having enough bottle to ask for a pack of condoms and asking for everything else. You know, party poppers that go pop in the night. I mentioned it to somebody in the press that that's what it was about. And I got dragged in by Dave Robinson, the head of Stiff Records, and told I must keep my mouth shut and I mustn't mention this because we'll get banned. The record will get banned. And if the BBC find out about it, we've had it. I was told I mustn't explain a song that I didn't write. I mean, I've learned that lesson now. You know,
you're just a dumb drummer up the back or something.
Well, exactly, yes, exactly, yeah.
Let's go back to an early one. What about One Step Beyond?
One Step Beyond is the one song that we sat for hours arguing against having as a single. We felt it didn't really represent the band because Suggs wasn't singing on it, and it was going to be the first Stiff Records single, and Dave Robinson was adamant that that should be the one. And
why did he want that one so much?
I've no idea, but it was the right choice, definitely. I mean, it kicked the band in straight away. I mean, it just went straight in the charts, did really well. The only trouble is that it's one of those things that even now, Voice of the Beehive gigs, I get some idiot saying, "One Step Beyond." You know, it's like, it's, if you know, I think that's going to be the one song that's going to be hard to play at Finsbury Park, because we played it so many times. You know, all you hear from people is "One Step Beyond."
Hey, you! Don't watch that. Watch this.
One Step Beyond from Madness. Tonight on Triple J, I'm chatting with Woody Woodgate. Okay, just one more song that we'll talk about.
Yeah.
And that's Tomorrow's Just Another Day.
Oh, yeah. I remember that for the fact of it's... I think it's one of our best videos. I just think it's wonderful. And also, my memory of it is that Elvis Costello did a version of it with us. And that was a real buzz, playing with him. Because he's just such a professional. And we did a like a slow jazz version. And it was just wonderful, really wonderful. And he came and played it live with us. I mean, he came as a guest and came on stage and sang it live. And it was like, goosebumps still go up on my arms just thinking about it. It's great.
Thought I'd done my best all my life. I can't get no rest. Some who've closed the door before say I can't carry on no more. I hear them saying tomorrow's just another day. Them saying tomorrow's just another day. I hear them saying listen, love, try to take it in. All these facts lead me
just finally, Woody, what do you reckon the feeling's going to be like at Finsbury Park in London when you play these Madness shows?
Oh, no, I'm just so nervous about it. I think it's going to be, I don't know, it's just going to be the event to be at. It's going to be...
30,000 people. Did Madness play in front of 30,000 people in their day?
I don't think we ever did.
Day?
Not on our own, no. Not as a headline band, no. I mean, we supported people like David Bowie at Anaheim Stadium. We did a lot of police tours where we supported the police. But nothing.
And now you've got Morrissey supporting you.
Well, yeah, quite right too.
Put him in his place.
Quite right. Yeah, I mean, I was a bit upset to hear what he did over here. I thought that was a bit out of order.
Oh, well,
pulling those gigs.
Yeah, well,
but I'll tell him that anyway.
Yeah, pass the sentiments on to him.
I will do, yeah.
Tell him to get his ass back over here as quickly as possible.
Exactly, there are a lot of very disappointed Australians who wanted to see him.
Yeah. Woody, it's been a delight chatting to you tonight, all about madness. It's been good reflecting on it.
Yeah, you made a very happy man old, yes, thank you.
Well, good luck on the upcoming shows in London. And I'm going to give you the choice of picking the final song, the final Madness song to play tonight. Which one would you like to play?
Well, I'll be very selfish. Seeing I wrote this one, I'll go for Michael Caine.
Ah, one of your own compositions. And you actually got Michael to come in and do a bit of a cameo on this one.
No, we actually went to him. He was in his club in London and we went and said, do you mind talking into this microphone, please? You know, do you mind appearing on a Madness record? And he said, no, certainly.
Madness, Michael Caine, and as Woody said, a song he wrote that year for the band. Many thanks indeed to Woody Woodgate for coming into Triple J tonight and chatting all about his previous band, Woody, recently in the country on the Voice of the Beehive national tour. Well, during the interview, Woody mentioned what some of the members of Madness are up to these days. He mentioned that Carl was working as an A&R guy at Go Disc Records, the record company which signed up Madness. Suggs is, well, he's been varying in between a TV career and still keeping his foot in music. He presented a recent show on English TV called The Power Station. He also is managing a band. He manages The Farm. Mark Betters, the bass player, he's doing a typography course at the London College of Printing. And Lee and Chris are still carrying the Madness torch in a band called The Nutty Boys. Mike Barson, who left the band in 1984, he's now living in Amsterdam. He moved over to Amsterdam to live with his girlfriend in 1984, and apparently Woody says he's writing material at the moment with Suggs for, I guess, a future release, which should be interesting to hear. What will be interesting to hear is how Madness go down this weekend in London, playing at Finsbury Park, two absolutely huge shows. To the north of London, 30,000 people sold out completely. That's 30,000 each day. So 60,000 people all up cramming into Finsbury Park in the north of London this weekend to see Madness on their two very, very, very final shows. So Woody reckons, with fingers crossed. And, well, we mentioned that Morrissey's one of the support bands. Ian Dury is also going to be supporting Madness on the weekend, and Flowered Up will be the other support band. What a gig to be at. What a gig to be at. Pity we're so far away and it costs so much to get there. Let's hope though that Morrissey doesn't opt out of this concert on the weekend for the sake of our English compatriots.